Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, December the 12th. And we are going to beat Talk of the Nation to the punch today and have Wisconsin Public Radio's version of the Political Junkie this hour. NPR's Political Junkie Ken Rudin will be joining Neil Conan at after one this afternoon to talk about all things politics, including Oprah stumping for Obama while Maya Angelou backs Hillary Clinton, and Mike Huckabee finds himself in the lead and the target of attack ads. We will have Wisconsin Public Radio's political junkie, a UW-Madison political scientist, Charles Franklin, with us this hour to cover some of the same territory. But we'll also talk about a curious Wisconsin poll, the Badger poll, that has Fred Thompson ahead of his GOP challengers here in the Badger state. Is there a little name confusion going on here? We will welcome your questions and thoughts as well about the race for the White House, how it's shaping up right now, any questions on the candidates or the campaigns or the issues being addressed or avoided. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Charles Franklin is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and co-developer and contributor to pollster.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So Fred Thompson ahead in Wisconsin, according to this Badger poll?
Well, according to the Badger poll, but I'm not sure according to anybody else.
Yeah, what is this?
Well, there are a couple of things. I think the most important is to realize that the Badger poll was only 500 total people and only about 175 Republicans and Republican voters. So that means about an 8-point margin of error right there.
Okay.
So I don't think you want to take the Badger poll very seriously for its Republican or, for that matter, Democratic primary results. There are just too few cases there to take it very seriously.
Yeah. Hillary was ahead on the Democratic side.
Yeah, the Fred Thompson lead on the Republican side was pretty hard to believe. Though the confusion with Tommy is, of course, a possibility in that one. On the Democratic side, their results look pretty much in line with national results and therefore pretty plausible. But I would just stress in both cases the sample size is way smaller than we'd normally accept for a statewide primary poll.
Yeah. And Wisconsin may not matter all that much when it comes to the primary race anyway, right?
No, our situation's a peculiar one. We didn't move. We're still the same time we were 4 years ago when we were really important. But about 25 states jumped ahead of us to February 5th. And so that February 5th Super Tuesday is likely to be the knockout punch for both parties. But on the other hand, if 20-something states split their votes and we come out of there with two or more viable candidates still in the race, suddenly Wisconsin 2 weeks later looks very important. So probably we won't get any excitement, but if we do, we're going to see a lot of candidates in those 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it's the inevitable winners don't seem so inevitable anymore.
That's right. The rule in primaries, especially Democratic primaries, has been that an awful lot changes in the last month or two of the campaign. Republicans historically have been a little more stable than Democrats that way. But this year, both parties have suddenly started to take real moves, especially in the early primary states, but also nationally, here with a little under a month to go to Iowa. So I think things are getting pretty exciting. As a political junkie, but Joy, I want you to know I could quit any time. I could just walk away from it. For the political junkies, things are getting real exciting right now.
Yeah, it's a dead heat in Iowa on the Democratic side anyway. Talk some about maybe the Oprah effect on Obama.
Well, the interesting thing there is that Obama has consistently trailed Clinton basically since the middle of the spring, since March or so. And both have been relatively flat. In the last 3 weeks or so, Obama started to move up, and Clinton has either flattened or started to come down. So this past weekend, Oprah Winfrey campaigned for Obama in three states, three early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. And the most notable thing is she and that guy who happens to be running for president,
right.
Obama, drew very large crowds. So there's obviously a lot of discussion about the role that celebrity endorsements play. And the general answer to that is celebrity endorsements don't seem to mean very much in the past.
But Oprah might be different, some are saying.
Well, there's a lot of speculation that Oprah might be different. I think there's the following reasons to think that this could have an effect. One is a lot of anecdotal evidence that a good chunk of the people that came to those rallies came to see Oprah rather than came to see Obama. Now, that could be bad for Obama that it's his rally, but he wasn't able to turn the people out for him. But the good side for him is that a lot of people who like and watch Oprah regularly are not that tuned into politics. They aren't junkies. They're normal, sane people. So for them to now start watching politics for a basically non-political reason, they like Oprah, does open them up to influence and their opportunity to learn who this Obama guy is that otherwise they really hadn't paid very much attention to. So I think that the advantage for Obama in all three states, and maybe nationally, but especially those three states, is that Oprah draws people who might not normally be involved in the process and gives Obama a chance to convince them.
We are. I need to take a weather break. We are talking with Charles Franklin, a UW-Madison political science professor, about the latest news from the presidential campaign trail, an update on how the race is shaping up and changing on both sides. We'll focus in some on Mike Huckabee's rise after the weather break. And we'll welcome your questions about the race. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, December the 12th. And you can talk more about politics on Talk of the Nation after 1 o'clock. Political junkie Ken Rudin will join Neil Conan for a giant-sized political junkie after 1 o'clock this afternoon. We're doing our version of the political junkie this hour with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer and contributor to pollster.com. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you would like to talk about any news from the campaign trail, or in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll go to the phones in just a minute or two, Professor Franklin, but what do we make of Mike Huckabee soaring way ahead on the GOP side in Iowa and nationally, for that matter, too?
Well, he is really the perfect example of what can happen in a primary when an unknown suddenly becomes known. He's gone from well under 10% to now running in at least a close second place most places, and in a couple of polls has threatened to move into first place. Basically, what we're seeing here, I think, is that conservative and religious Republicans who had a hard time with Giuliani because of his social issues, had a hard time with Romney because of the Mormonism issue and perhaps his flip-flopping, had a hard time with John McCain because of campaign finance reform and some other things. Those people were left really in a hard place for finding a top Republican to latch on to. For a while, it looked like Fred Thompson might be the candidate of religious and conservative Republicans, but the Thompson campaign's really fizzled since he announced in September. And so that opened the door for those folks to find somebody to latch on to. It took them a while, but they've really come to Mike Huckabee now. And that's propelled Huckabee up in Iowa, most importantly, where he now leads Mitt Romney, who had been leading in Iowa for a long time. So that Huckabee rise then generates, as we know, lots of media attention, which generates further support for him, and which also causes the current backlash of now more scrutiny of his record as governor, and certainly it makes him a target for the other campaigns to criticize as well.
Right. In fact, Mitt Romney launched the what's called the first attack ad this week. He says, Mitt Romney says it's a comparison ad, but it criticizes Huckabee's immigration stands, like giving free tuition to illegal immigrants.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, the thing that's really interesting here is how the Romney campaign strategy seems to have worked like clockwork, just like perfection, all year. He's risen slowly in the national polls, but he's been in first place in Iowa and New Hampshire for a while and had moved into first place in South Carolina. So that's perfect if you're a candidate. You don't want to be too visible nationally until you really break out in those early primaries. Now he's trailing in Iowa. He's coming down in New Hampshire. South Carolina, Huckabee's surging. So the Romney campaign, where everything seemed to be going according to schedule, now suddenly looks like it's got a real serious problem.
Yeah. Let's go to some calls. Steve in Rice Lake. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Hey, great show. Just wondering what your guest thought about a couple weeks ago on Meet the Press, James Carville's wife, the Republican strategist, kind of threw her backing behind Thompson, and her big thing was Fred Thompson was the publishing of his white papers. And then just on a more silly note, I was wondering what your guest thought about Oprah showing a little more cleavage than Miss Clinton has been in the past. I know that got brought up on CNN yesterday.
I guess I didn't notice that.
She tuned it back down when they were in the Carolinas or wherever she was stumping on the second.
Did you notice that, Professor Franklin?
I have to say I did not, but I haven't been following the coverage there. It's good to know that we have a substantive debate in this country where the media can afford to elect presidents based on their either the candidate or the supporters' cleavage.
Right.
Yippee.
You know, I was going to ask Steve to clarify a little bit. Maybe you understand this white papers and Fred Thompson? He said that Mary Matland threw her support behind Fred Thompson and his white papers. I didn't quite understand that.
If Steve's gone, I have to say I don't know about the white papers, and I didn't see that particular show. I do think the issue here on Fred Thompson is that, you know, he drew some solid support from establishment Republican folks. I think there's some, and she may be an example of people who still think he might come back and do well. But it really has been a surprisingly disappointing campaign after an early and strong rise in the spring and most of the summer. Really, the campaign has fizzled, and I think it's going to take some remarkable turnaround for that campaign to revive.
Yeah, and then there's this new national poll that finds that all of the Republican candidates are really not viewed that favorably by Republican voters.
Well, I think this is the unusual thing in the Republican Party. For the last 30 or so years, the Republicans have been pretty good at nominating a sort of designated successor. 1980, way back when, was a bit of an exception when George Bush the elder actually gave Ronald Reagan a run for his money, and Bush the elder stayed in until May 20th, the Michigan primary that year, but then dropped out and Reagan won, and of course in 84 without opposition. But then we go to 88, and it's Bush as vice president pretty handily getting the nomination. In 96, it was Bob Dole's turn. In 2000, John McCain turned out to challenge George W. Bush now, and gave him a bit of a run for his money, but again, was settled fairly quickly. Democrats have more of a history of dark horses coming out of nowhere, back to Jimmy Carter, say, or Michael Dukakis. So this year, the Republican race looks more like the typical Democratic race, where the party's not really settled on a clear front runner. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the problems here is at least the top three candidates, Giuliani, Romney, and McCain, all have elements of their political histories that are offend and are rejected by important core constituencies in the party. And so that sort of sense of dissatisfaction and whether we have to back say Giuliani because he's the most electable, even if we don't agree with him on social issues. That's really led to a lot of unhappiness among Republicans. I think it also accounts for some of the rush to Huckabee at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That may get revised as people know more about his record and as he's attacked more. But at the moment, it looks like the advantage of the Huckabee campaign is he's certainly a legitimate social and religious conservative, and so a lot of Republicans are flocking to him for that. On the other hand, he's been attacked within the party for having raised taxes in Arkansas, and now with Romney, you hear this attack based on his immigrant policies in Arkansas. So he's not invulnerable, and this we'll wait 3 weeks and see whether this is a flash in the pan or whether he really has the staying power to hold on.
Barbara in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I'm a political junkie also. And last night on CNN and then later on Chris Matthews, I heard that if a poll were taken nationally, Edwards would be the candidate to beat the Republican candidates. And they listed them all. And the only place that was even close and Edwards still came out ahead was against McCain. Could you comment on this, please?
Yeah, there have been a lot of these are trial heat polls where you pair all of the candidates against each other. I didn't see that particular poll, but I can tell you across dozens of polls recently that all three Democrats have solid performances against all three top Republicans, mm-hmm. and I think there's not enough data on Huckabee yet to judge how that's going. And really what we've seen in most of those trial heats is pretty solidly a consistent Democratic line, a consistent Republican line, and then between the different pairings of candidates, you vary maybe 2 to 5 points in that. So I'm a little hesitant to take a single poll that shows Edwards doing that well too seriously. The point I'd really make is that all three Democrats seem pretty competitive against all three and maybe now four top Republicans. Early in the race, Giuliani was leading the Democrats, but that's now switched, and it's Democrats leading Giuliani by a small amount. All of the campaigns, but especially the Edwards campaign, have wanted to make that claim that he is more competitive. But I think really the data suggests that when it comes right down to it, any Democrat is competitive against any Republican. And I think the claimed advantages for each one are probably not all that strong.
Yeah, I did see a coverage of that poll anyway on Matthew's program and some others. They also, and I'll ask you more about this after our news break, that same poll, I believe, was looking at favorability. And Hillary Clinton, among Democratic voters, was viewed very, very favorably. Like 68% had a favorable impression of her. So I want to talk to you a little bit about that after the news. Charles Franklin, our guest, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer and contributor to pollster.com, talking with us about news from the presidential campaign trail. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Wednesday, December the 12th, and we are doing Wisconsin Public Radio's version of the Political Junkie this hour, covering lots of news from the presidential campaign trail. And welcoming your thoughts and questions about the latest news in politics from the presidential campaign trail. Any thoughts or questions on the candidates, the issues being covered or not covered, how the campaigns and the race is shaping up? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org. Our guest is Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison and co-developer and contributor to pollster.com. Just before the news, we were talking about some of the latest polling information. There, I thought it was a CNN poll, but I was wrong. It's not the CNN poll. It was the latest New York Times CBS poll, which we did discuss earlier this hour, that showed that a lot of Republican voters are not pleased with their Republican choices. This same poll found that the Democratic voters are pleased with their choices, and it showed Hillary Clinton viewed favorably by 68% of Democrats, followed by Barack Obama with 54%, and John Edwards viewed favorably by 36%. Those are pretty strong favorables for Hillary Clinton, aren't they, Charles Franklin?
Yes, but the key caveat is that it's among Democratic voters.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the year,
aren't they the ones who count though in the in the primary? Anyway?
They absolutely count in the primary, but that's to the extent that it's a surprising finding. It's only surprising because people have accepted the idea that Clinton is this polarizing candidate who has a lot of negatives. Well, that's possibly true, but the polarizations between Democrats who like her a lot and Republicans who don't like her at all. So within the party, her favorability ratings have been quite high all year, and that's in line with those. I think the low ratings on Edwards have more to do with his relative obscurity this year, where he's focused primarily in Iowa, really hasn't mounted a national campaign beyond Iowa, and so somewhat less familiarity with him.
Yeah.
Can I jump in, Joy?
Sure.
I want to clarify this thing that Barbara asked about before the break on Edwards running stronger than other candidates.
Right.
That is the new CNN poll done December 6th through 9th. And to give you an example of what it is, against Giuliani, Clinton has a 6-point lead, Obama has a 7-point lead, and Edwards a 9-point lead. And that relatively modest range of about 3-point difference is what I was talking about in the national polling that shows, you know, basically the candidates pretty clumped together. But what's surprising about the CNN poll is when you go beyond Giuliani, Edwards has a 22-point lead over Romney, where Clinton only has an 11-point lead, and Edwards has an 8-point lead over McCain, where Clinton actually trails McCain by 2 points. So that is surprising and different in this CNN poll than what we've seen on average across other polls. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Yeah. An email from Michael, who lives in Phoenix, Arizona. Living in a land chock full of Republicans, I'm hearing a lot about their dissatisfaction with their candidate choices, which we've been discussing this hour. I'm starting to wonder what the Vegas odds are on a brokered Republican convention where the nominee turns out to be none of the above, whose name has not even been talked about before the convention. I think I'd like to get some money down. What does your guest think?
I'll take that bet off the air. I think this is the kind of thing that all of us junkies love to speculate about and think about. We haven't had a brokered convention in 70 years, 80 years, something like that. It's been a very long time. And I think unlikely to happen again. The dynamics of the modern primary system mean that it's very hard to go to the convention and still be so poised at a knife's edge that you don't have it settled. Remember, in the time when we did have brokered conventions or undecided conventions, we had very few primaries. That totally changed in the 1970s. So I'm sorry to say, Michael, that it's unlikely we'll get there. But then again, the 2000 election was pretty unlikely, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all us junkies can always hope for something like that. Just for fun.
I was just going to go to a caller who gave up on us, who's wants your take on Ron Paul, and might he see a bump in the polls sometime soon? He's making a lot of money on the Internet.
Yeah, Paul has surprised a lot of political insiders anyway by being extremely successful in fundraising, and so he does now have quite a lot of money to spend. He's seen some upturn, actually. He's up to 4.1% in the national polls, up from about 0% or 0.5%. And in Iowa, he's actually had a a kind of non-trivial upturn, still putting him well behind the other front runners. But right now in Iowa, he's running at about 5%, which leaves him still in fourth or fifth place, but with a bit of an upturn. I think the really interesting thing about Ron Paul, is how intense his supporters are and how motivated they seem to be in terms of calling radio shows emailing and things like that. And this is actually a big issue for the Iowa caucuses, because it's possible to show up in Iowa and declare yourself an Iowan and register to vote in the caucuses on caucus night.
Even if you're not.
Mm. And one of the issues that's being talked about right now is what kind of ID needs to be shown in order to participate in the caucuses. In the past, it was pretty open. But this year, in part because both caucuses are so competitive, both parties are talking about, but have not yet clearly decided, how to ensure that they're not getting a whole lot of staffers and volunteers from out of state showing up and trying to pack these caucuses. And on the Republican side, the intensity of Paul's supporters has raised some concern that his supporters might show up. Now, of course, if they all show up from Iowa, that's legit. There's nothing wrong with that. If they're from out of state, then that gives the Iowa party a bit of a problem of being dominated by non-Iowans. So we'll see how that plays out
and what
kinds of ID requirements there are.
I was going to ask you about that, because I heard some comments about all the polls in Iowa and, you know, the tight race in Iowa, but then someone mentioned, but we really don't have a way to be polling likely caucus goers. Because of the way the system is, and I wanted to ask you about that.
Well, that's a great question. In Iowa, the maximum turnout we see for caucuses is about 6%. So that's tiny compared to most primaries, and of course, genuinely tiny compared to a general election where, some in Iowa, over 60% vote. So the caucus turnout is really, really small, and that's actually why any candidate, but Ron Paul in particular, with an intense enough group of supporters, can actually come in and have a pretty significant impact on the caucuses. Precisely because the turnout is so low for them.
Yeah, and so these polls we're seeing might be way off.
Yeah, there are two ways to do polling in Iowa, and most of the media rely on what's called random digit dialing, where you call random phone numbers. But then you have to ask a series of questions to try to identify who's actually going to vote in the caucus. Most of those polls end up screening out a lot of people, but still end up with something between 15 and 25% of their original sample who swear they're going to go and vote in the primary, in the caucus. Well, that would be double or triple historical levels. It's just very hard to filter out and to figure out then exactly who's going to come. So those polls suffer from that problem. Other polls buy a list from the parties of people who've participated in the caucuses in the past, and they make calls to past caucus goers. The trouble there is, what do you do about newly mobilized caucus goers? Because every campaign likes to claim that it's turning out a new set of people who haven't participated in the past. So it's a little hard to sample them. And then finally, we get the big unknown. Is Iowa going to be covered with ice on January 5th, like it is today?
Right.
Or January 3rd, rather, sorry. Or is the weather going to be beautiful and lots of people are going to come out? We really don't know that, and it's very hard to ponder.
We're going to check our weather forecast right now and then continue talking politics, presidential politics, with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer and contributor to pollster.com. We're talking about some of the newer national polls and, for that matter, regional polls in the presidential race, welcoming your thoughts and questions on the candidates, the campaigns, the way the race for the White House is shaping up. Are you leaning Republican? Have you picked a candidate? Are you happy with your field of candidates? A New York Times poll says you're not. On the Democratic side, have you maybe shifted from Hillary Clinton, who had been leading the polls, to Barack Obama, who's moving up? Is Oprah playing into that? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 11 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we'll talk with the founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, who is also the author of a cover story that was recently on Foreign Policy magazine, saying it's time to just say no to the war on drugs, time to legalize drugs. We'll wonder what you think about that coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we wonder what you think about the race for the presidency, the race for the White House. We're talking about all the latest news coming off the campaign trail with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer and contributor to pollster.com. 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line for you. Do you have a favorite candidate right now, and why is that? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Are you still waiting? Are you still undecided? Why is that? We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest as well. Larry in Madison joins us next. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi. Congressman Duncan Hunter has the most national security knowledge of all candidates in either party. He's a Vietnam vet and has a son in Iraq. Why has there been no media attention outside of C-SPAN about him, and why does he have such low poll numbers?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. One is congressmen in general are surprisingly obscure when they run for president. And so historically it's been very hard for a member of the House of Representatives to break through. It's also actually been relatively hard for senators in general. More senators lose than governors do, as a matter of fact. But Hunter has participated in all of the major debates and has had his shot at breaking through. But he is someone with very solid conservative credentials and raises that same kind of question we were talking about earlier on the Republican side. If the top three or four have questions about solid conservative credentials, why haven't any of the more conservative members or candidates below? Sam Brownback, for example, who's now dropped out. Mm-hmm. Duncan Hunter is another example. Tom Tancredo, congressman from Colorado. And yet the party didn't turn to any of those solid conservatives months ago, and only now has caught on to this Huckabee surge. So it's a very hard thing to explain why one candidate like Huckabee suddenly catches on, but not another candidate like Duncan Hunter. And I think I have to leave that as one of those political mysteries, the combination of personality and oratorical skills, and in short say, I don't know.
But talk a little bit more about, we touched on it in the beginning, but Huckabee's rise in the polls is in part because he's funny, he's got a good personality, maybe Republicans' dissatisfaction with all the other candidates. But,
right.
What is so special about Huckabee?
Well, I would say the other part is Huckabee's strategy, which has been in part smart and in part because he has no choice. He's really focused his attention on Iowa, has spent a huge amount of time in Iowa, has gone off to all of the small towns and, had breakfast with three mm-hmm. supporters, and managed to turn that into success at the straw poll in August when he finished second, leading Sam Brownback, who subsequently dropped out, and Duncan Hunter and the other other more conservative candidates. And so Huckabee's strategy for lack of money, he can't really afford to run in several states, has been focused there, and the kind of retail politics, the one-on-one politics that I think probably comes pretty natural to an Arkansas governor, a very rural state, also play as well in Iowa. It may be that, for example, a Duncan Hunter, who's used to a congressional race in a very highly populated California district, may not be used to that same kind of retail politics, and maybe some of the others don't do it as well. And you know, then, again, this sort of mysterious factor of, you know, people that shake Mike Huckabee's hand and come away saying, you know, I like that guy.
Yeah, what about his ad saying he's the Christian leader?
Well, I think the real issue there is that this plays very well in a Republican caucus or primary. It's going to run into more problems when it hits more secular states, and should he get the nomination, certainly an issue in the more secular general election. But given the context of the Republican caucus in Iowa, that's probably a pretty sensible thing to do.
Yeah. Is he going to be hurt at all by this latest flap over his comments back in, whatever, 92, talking about isolating AIDS patients?
Yeah. Again, I think within the context of the Republican caucus, probably not too much. But that would certainly be an issue if we were talking about the New York primary or the California primary and so on. The other side, of course, is all candidates of every party end up having quotes dug up from them from their deep, dark past that in retrospect they wish they hadn't said. And for the most part, candidates manage to get over those things from the past. In this particular case, we'll kind of have to wait and see, but the fact is that I think candidates in the end are more judged by what they say today and how they deal with those questions from the past rather than anything else. So Huckabee, for example, when he was criticized on immigration by Mitt Romney in a recent debate, said, you know, his reply was, yeah, I want to send kids of illegal immigrants to school because you don't kick a six-year-old in the face for the crimes their parents committed. That's the kind of response that any successful candidate has to manage, how to turn something that could be seen as a negative support for illegal immigrants and quote, rights for them, to turn that around and turn it into a positive response. And Huckabee managed it in that case. We'll see whether he can continue to manage it under more sustained attack for his support for programs to support at least the families of illegal aliens.
Do we know yet, Professor Franklin, if Mitt Romney did himself any favors or not with his speech on faith last week?
We have not seen any real sharp change in the handful of polls that have been taken since then. It may be still a little too early, but it also was news that flew in the face of the news that, you know, of this Huckabee rise that's kind of dominated coverage. So my impression, based on the handful of polls we've had, is so far we don't see much movement on that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I was also going to ask you about how Hillary Clinton is responding to Barack Obama's momentum at the moment. And I saw yesterday her hanging out with Warren Buffett, and he was raising money for her and talking about how he picks a president like he picks a CEO of a company, somebody with a good resume and experience.
Yeah, I suspect she should have been hanging out with people in a coffee shop in Iowa.
Maybe the ice
stalker. And not Mr. Buffett. Really, the interesting thing about the Clinton campaign is that she can probably, because of her front-runner status, because of her money, she can afford to lose Iowa and then have to come back later. But it sure makes her path much harder if she has to do that. Whereas Obama and Edwards, if they lose Iowa, it's going to be very hard for them to then come back and win New Hampshire or South Carolina. Not impossible, but much harder. So the problem for the Clinton campaign is they need to take Iowa real seriously, because a win there could really help them run the table. But a loss there is going to mean they have to dig themselves out. The trouble is, at the same time, the Clinton people don't want to raise expectations about Iowa. Mm-hmm. If they say it's a must-win for us and we're going to win, and then they don't,
that's bad news.
Then that's bad news for them. So they have a very delicate balancing act. And then the last thing is, it's still unclear whether Hillary Clinton has managed to sell herself very well in those small-town Iowa settings where, again, Mike Huckabee has done quite a good job, and whether a senator from New York and someone in her position has really managed to resonate with the rank-and-file Iowa caucus-goers.
Well, as another political junkie, it's going to be really interesting to watch this one play out. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Yeah,
Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer and contributor to pollster.com. And by the way, Kathleen Dunn is going to be broadcasting live on location in Dubuque on January 3rd and January 4th, the day of and the day after the Iowa caucuses. Stay tuned for more information on those broadcasts on this station. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.